ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $14.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Adele Park talks about her current quirky audiobook, Yikes. Sweden's own singing goddess of song, Sophia, is back in Europe. But we caught up with her in Florida, where she told us about her recent tour of the USA. And if you love the movie Sideways, you're in for a fine wine with a sequel and her audiobook feature, right after the news you want to know. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre. And here's your art and entertainment news that you want to know. Oh my goodness. I don't know if you've heard about this, but a federal jury awarded crime writer Patricia Cornwell nearly $51 million in her lawsuit against her former financial management company. The author is best known for her series of novels featuring medical examiner Kay Scarpetta, and she claimed that the management company Anken, Block, and Anken LLP was negligent in handling her finances and cost her millions of dollars in losses and unaccounted for revenue. Basically, she fired the firm in 2009 when she discovered that her net worth was just under $13 million.
You know what? I would have done the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, it does sound like outrageous. I kind of would be thrilled, but I mean, the last 4 years of her working life, she was making an eight-figure salary. Eight figures. That's a lot of zeros.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
In each of the 4 years? Wow.
In each of the 4 years, she earned eight figures. So for her net worth to be under $13 million is kind of... That's a lot of money missing.
Something's
from somewhere.
Wrong. Yeah.
She fired them and started this lawsuit because she claimed that they moved her from a more conservative investment strategy into a more aggressive one, and then so she lost all this money. Of course, Anken said they didn't do that, but the judge and jury had their decision, and she won. She won $51 million.
Wow.
So
you know what's it's amazing is that. I don't know if any of you guys have read any of her books, but she's actually a very, very good writer.
Yeah, it's amazing. And also, the problem, too, with this lawsuit was that she also lost a year's worth of income of writing. So she lost about $15 million in unrecoverable advances and commission. So she really, you know, it's good for her. It's
I would
really
like to lose just one-fifth of that.
I know, honestly.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, it's like the running joke. We always tell people, like, hey, if I had your money, I'd throw mine away, you know?
Exactly. I know. I would just burn it in the fireplace. I know. It is hard to feel bad because, you know, her net worth is $13 million. I mean, that's a huge amount of money. And now it's, well, 51 and 13. That's math. Wait,
yeah,
that's math.
That's 64.
$64 million. That's, yeah, she's doing fine for herself. Yeah. She'll be fine. She'll write another book and she'll be fine.
Well, you know, it just seems that, you know, the wealthier you are, you know, the more money seems to be coming your way.
I know.
Isn't that right, Ty?
That is right. Yeah. And, you know, someone else who kind of had the same thing happen only in reverse is Don Johnson. He was, he filed a lawsuit with the producers of Nash Bridges fighting for a share of the profits from the show since 2010. And Johnson claimed that his contract gave him 50% of the show's profits if they ran more than 66 episodes, and they ran 122 episodes. So the jury awarded Johnson 50% of the copyright, which came out to $28 million, and then with interest, it ballooned up to $50 million. But the producers were like, whoa, that's way too much money, so they put in an appeal, and it finally got dropped to $19 million. So he settled for $19 million. He signed a letter of acknowledgement and satisfaction that was confirmed by The Hollywood Reporter. But yeah, these people, this money, I mean, it's just like, yeah, oh, $50 million to $19 million. I mean, that's like, you know, there's so many millions of dollars. I mean, $1 million would change anybody's life here forever.
Yeah,
and, you know, they can just throw away $20 million without even a thought.
For all of us, you know, who don't make eight figures a year, you know, it's mind-blowing, you know. But for it, it's really, if you just take it back to, you know, mathematics, he was entitled to it.
They should if they signed that contract. Then,
I'm sure when they signed that contract, Chrissy, they were thinking, like, this thing's never going to go 66 episodes. Yeah. That's 5 years. You know, that's 5 years, 6 months, you know?
Right.
This show is awful. We're not even going to get out of the first season. Yeah. Because people liked it.
And then, you know, but I do get your point, Si, that, you know, it's like, you know, because, you know, money is very tight all around the world. I mean, it's amazing what people will do for money.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Maya?
It is, yeah. And in Japan right now, there is a new trend that certainly proves that. Companies are actually launching print campaigns on young women's bare legs. So these girls are definitely going for the money in terms of turning their bodies into billboards. Participants paste temporary tattoos of brand logos on their legs and then spend the day exposing them to anyone who notices. As of November last year, about 1,300 women have registered their legs. And so the name of the PR company is Absolute Territory, which is a translation of the Japanese phrase Zerai Reiwiki, which is used to describe the area on a woman's leg between the bottom of her skirt or short and the beginning of a thigh-high or knee-high stocking. And the style has been popularized by Japanese anime and manga. Really, this idea is smart because it goes along with the advertising philosophy that ads should run wherever people are looking. And I guess that's where people look.
Cheeky men looking at women's legs.
Yes. But participants, they have to be at least 18 years old, and they have to wear it for at least 8 hours. And they also have to be connected to at least 20 people on social networking sites, because part of the deal is that they then post photos of themselves wearing the decals on pages like Facebook and Twitter as proof that they did the job. And they can expect to earn between $13 and $130 for one day's work. Well, you guys, I have a little something for you.
All right.
I decided this is such a good idea of, like, I thought maybe I would want to just try this myself. So I know that you listeners can't necessarily see this, but I am wearing thigh-high stockings, and I just want you to see I'm now endorsing Get Behind Me Now, Stay There.
Very provocative, I must say. Very provocative.
And Maya's mix is on here, a little sticker. So what do you think?
I like it.
Yeah, it's like a Howard Stern show.
Yeah, I think this is a new future. I'll see if I can make some extra money.
Well, we gotta get some. We have to get a photo of that.
Definitely.
Yeah, we'll put that on the Just Imagine Inc. Facebook page.
That way you can.
But you better pay me for that.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah, the proof of that you did it.
Yeah, yeah. You'll make at least $13 to $130 a day.
At least $13.
At least thirteen. Of course, that would be in Japanese yen, but. You know.
Well, that's like a yen.
Or all the top ramen you can eat. That is great, Maya. That's great. We got to get a picture of that.
Oh, my God.
So I guess, yeah, in Japan, they're Buddhists and Buddhist monks, right? Is their national religion or something. But if they came out to Hollywood, they'd find Scientology. And Pulitzer Prize-winning author Lawrence Wright's new book about Scientology, its origins, its evolution, and its believers is a powerful piece of reporting. It is detailed, intense, and at times shocking, but it's not merely an indictment of one of the world's newest faiths. Scientologists deny many parts of the book, It's also a reminder of the dangers of combining faith with fear and the foolishness of choosing to believe anything blindly. Going Clear, Scientology, Hollywood, and the Prison of Belief traces Scientology's history through a variety of characters, the most important being L. Ron Hubbard, who used to do all the commercials, and Tom Cruise, the religion's most famous adherent.
Well, when you say used to do the commercials, this is a fascinating story. When you say do the commercials, as far as listening to the audience out there, they may not be in tune with it, but back in the 70s, there was like all those commercials for Dianetics.
Yes. And that was the book.
That was the book. That was that's their Bible, is Dianetics. And everyone would go on to TV talking about how Dianetics changed their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually kind of interesting because L. Ron Hubbard said the book Dianetics was his, that was his thesis in college.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, everybody had that. My mom had it. I mean, I remember seeing it on her bedside table.
Yeah, I remember Tom Cruise loaned me his copy.
It's very dog-eared, lots of notes in the margin.
Yeah, Tom Cruise is from Morristown, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah, I know.
He's a Jersey boy.
Yeah, he is a Jersey boy. Yeah.
So is...
Which explains his religion.
Yes. Wait a second.
And he also hangs out in Starbucks.
That's true. He's a hobo at Starbucks as well. Yeah. They sit next to each other.
He's the guy sitting behind the laptop going, show me the money.
Yes, exactly.
Show me the coffee.
Rocking out to Yoko Ono.
Rocking out to Yoko Ono. Gazing at Maya's thighs. Going, get behind me now, sir. Yeah, I'm liking that.
And there's a wrap-up of the news.
Yeah. Whatever you do, be careful about what you say about Scientology, because they are very aggressive litigators towards critics. So, we could be sued right now for this conversation.
Well, then we won't get our 8 figures for the year.
That's right, yeah.
Tom Cruise, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to out you at my local Starbucks.
So you think Blackstone will do this title?
No, I know they will not do this title.
They will not be doing this.
No, I can tell you that right now. They will not be doing this title. And we will not be jumping up and down on couches, but we will be going to Starbucks.
Damn, I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
Well, if Maya did it, we could see the Get Behind Me Now, Stay There ad.
And the Maya Mix logo.
Yeah, Maya, you make a lot more money then. Hey, you might be up to like $15 if you're jumping up.
$15? Now, come on, Chrissy. That's not going to carry it away here.
So I would make a two-figure... income?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
because 2 and 2 is still 4, so that's a single digit. Yeah. Yeah.
Zero's only after the decimal point, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Well, somebody that doesn't have to worry about money at all is Clive Davis. You know him, right?
I do.
He's a legendary producer and mentor to the stars of the music industry. He shaped the careers of Whitney Houston, Alicia Keys, Sean Diddy, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, Combs, I don't know what his name is now, Carlos Santana, Barry Manilow, Jennifer Hudson. I mean, the names just continue on.
I forgot that P. Diddy was Puff Daddy.
Yeah, I know. He's gone through so many iterations of his name. I think it's just Sean Combs, right?
Yeah.
Yes. At 80 years old,
he needs to hook up with Yoko.
Yeah.
They're both in the music business.
It's just in, yeah.
News report. They've gotten together.
Yes, she broke up his marriage. No. At 80 now, Davis is releasing his first autobiography. I mean, he's not busy enough in his life. Now he's got to write a book. It's amazing how busy people are. So it's called The Soundtrack of My Life. And he discusses never-before-heard tales of his life in the music industry. I mean, that could fill encyclopedias. I'm sure he's got so many great stories.
All those connections, yeah.
I know. It's amazing stories. So a lot of people in the music industry are worried that it's going down the tubes, but Davis says he has a positive outlook on it. And he said, there's no way that music could ever go down the tubes. I can't imagine a civilization without music. When you realize today that music is such a part of people's lives, and it will always be, really.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said he's really impressed with the creativity of today's new artists, including Frank Ocean, Alabama Shakes, Mumford & Sons, and the Lumineers.
He has good taste in music. I like all those artists. Yeah.
And he said he rarely pays attention to changes in the music industry, which he's been a part of for 40 years. And he said, for me, everything I do is the same. I look for artists the same way. So I leave it to others as to the technologically where it's going in terms of, like, you know, CD to tape to all that kind of stuff. But he said the essence is the same. He wants to find the artist that's going to be the next headliner, person that's going to lift people out of their seats at Madison Square Garden, the song that we're going to be singing for hundreds of years. He doesn't want to pay attention to when the LP became the cassette and all that kind of stuff.
There were cassettes?
Yeah, I know. Remember when you had to rewind a tape to get back to your favorite song?
Yeah, then, I do, as a matter of fact.
And then eject it and flip it over. It was good times.
B-side.
Yeah.
And then it would get all tangled.
Yeah, I remember when you had to hand crank the record player, man.
Right.
That's when I was hanging out with Clive.
On your gramophone?
On my gramophone, yeah. And I said, yeah. I said, watch it, get in there, damn it.
This is so random, but I just found out that my friend's great-grandfather invented the gramophone. I just think that's so crazy that I... Anyway, that's not for the show,
wow.
But I just wanted to mention that.
That's so bizarre. Amazing.
Will you get a temporary tattoo on your thigh of that?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. I know who invented the gramophone.
That's right. No,
Japanese company, pay me for that.
No, you gotta have a tattoo under that says, you know, Grandpa McIntyre invented the gramophone.
I know. I wish it was in my family. Believe me, that would be great. No, it's a friend
two
of mine.
Dalmatians, right?
While people are all over the world rocking out on their iPods and MP3 players, you might be surprised to learn that Davis doesn't listen to music at all for pleasure. He says he takes it home with him every week, and of every record that makes the charts, and whether it's R&B or alternative, pop or top 40, he's listening to it to kind of figure out what's, you know, keep him educated, essentially. Davis recalled an anecdote he learned from John Lennon when he ran into the singer during the period when he left the Beatles. Davis asked Lennon if he listened to the radio during his hiatus just to, you know, hear what's going on. And Lennon said to him, Clive, I don't listen to the radio. I don't keep up with music at all during this period. I'm out there enriching my life.
Hanging out with Yoko Ono.
Yeah, exactly. And Davis was shocked. He said, I would have thought, you know, not to imitate, not to duplicate, but just, you know, music is changing. What's going on? Just want to keep up. And John Lennon told Davis something that he never forgot. He said, Clive, let me ask you a question. Do you think Picasso went to galleries to check out what was being painted in between the times he took a brush to canvas? And, you know, I've never forgot, he said, and Clive said, you know, I've never forgotten that. Pure creative people, what they do, unnecessary for them. They have to look down deep in their soul. They live in their own creativity.
You know what? That is so true.
It's inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, it's like if you're going to do a painting or you're going to write a book, you know, you don't read everybody else's book to see how you can imitate it.
Right.
It has to come from you. That's a great analogy about, you know, do you think Picasso went to the galleries first to get inspiration?
Yeah. No, it's a fantastic quote. It's great. I'm going to carry that with me next time I'm painting a picture.
But the thing is, I make collages. And so in some ways, that's kind of a different twist because I take other people's art and put it into my own. So there are exceptions every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but when you're making the collage, you're looking for an effect. You're not looking for, like, you know, what's a popular picture.
That's very true.
You're just looking for what catches your eye that's going to, you know...
Inspire my own creativity.
Inspire your own creativity and correlate with what you already have imagined in your head.
This has been Deep Thoughts
with Get Behind Me Now.
Yeah. Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy. Wow. That was, you are throwing it back to the 90s there.
Yeah, you go. There you go. The 90s, yeah. Well, you know. I remember, that's when I was born.
Yeah. Ah, yes, of course.
I remember,
you and Jennifer Lawrence, 1990 was a good year.
Me and Jennifer, yeah, she lived down the street. I remember her living there. I have a pretty good memory from when I was a kid. I kept a diary.
Your first kiss?
Yeah, well, no, I remember day one, you know, I kept a journal. Like, you know, day one, still tired from the move.
You guys played Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Hiding the food from
day
each other.
Day two, everyone talks to me like I'm an idiot.
I know. Can somebody just feed me, please? I'm starving. Why aren't they listening to me?
Hey, that's a fascinating story about Clive Davis, and I bet he's got a lot of things that he could tell us all about, you know, over the last 80 years in the music business. I mean, some things you just want to know, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
And where can you find that out?
I wonder.
And when you want to know, you come to Jerry Renfro. And it's interesting that you would be talking about that because this week we're going to talk about the English language. The English language is an amazing thing. Every year, hundreds, if not thousands of new words are added to the lexicon. Some don't last, thank goodness. Like, you're never going to hear somebody say, hey, I saw the new Men at Work video. It was tubular and rad. Let's hope we never hear that again. But some words that are created are actually...
Jerry, people don't say that anymore?
No, I've apparently
heard,
not.
Some people say rad. Out of vogue. I've heard
rad. It's come back as sort of a retro cool now, but it's still rad. kind of hipsterish, you know?
It's
the
like
most
totally
people
rad.
Don't use it. Yeah, exactly. Right. So now some words that enter the language come from things like Google. That's actually become a verb. I Googled him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's named after the product Google. Well, some words are named after people that made them famous. Some of the more common ones are America, you know, which is named for Amerigo Vespucci, who was an Italian cartographer and map maker. And he was the first to realize that Columbus had actually discovered the New World. Columbus didn't realize he discovered the New World at first. He thought it was the edge of Asia.
Yeah,
or the sandwich. Everybody had a sandwich before. It's named for the Earl of Sandwich, who was such a degenerate gambler, he didn't want to leave the card table. So he ordered his servants to bring him a piece of meat between two slices of bread so that he wouldn't die, but he could keep gambling. So these particular words are actually...
I did not know that.
I bet you didn't. Yes, he was a degenerate gambler. Oh. So these words are called eponyms. And an eponym is essentially that. It's a word that's named after somebody. So I brought a few that I thought you might find interesting.
Okay.
And you should know most of these words, sideburns. Everybody knows what sideburns are, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you would think, where does that come from? Well, it's actually a... kind of a misuse of General Ambrose Burnside, who was a Civil War general who was a complete inept chucklehead and was very, in fact, he almost cost the Union a number of battles because of his ineptitude. And so he was very famous for wearing nothing on his chin but the rest of the beard. And so Burnside, they became sideburns.
Excellent.
Another one is silhouette. You know what a silhouette is? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like an outline figure. Well, silhouette is actually named for somebody, too. It's named after Étienne de Silhouette, who was the France's finance minister during the Seven-Year War. And France was going through a credit crisis, and they were really struggling. So he put through a lot of austerity measures to cut costs. So the cheapest way to, since photography hadn't been invented, the cheapest way to record somebody's image was to do a silhouette, because it's one color, it's solid black. So they named the process after him because it's such a cheap thing, and he was such a cheap person. another one that I like is boycott. You know what it means to boycott, where you don't help somebody or shun them? It was actually named after a person, Charles Boycott. He was a kind of like a landlord in Ireland in the 1880s, and he had to evict a bunch of people off the land. It wasn't his land. He was doing it for somebody else. So a local fellow by the name of Charles Parnell called for a speech saying that anybody who took over a farm where somebody had been evicted, that the local community should shun them. And even though Boycott, he wasn't the actual farmer, they shunned him. They wouldn't deliver his mail. The locals wouldn't trade with him, and the story was picked up by the International Wires. You know, the Telegraph was very popular at that time, and it spread around the world. And so to shun somebody or to not, you know, use somebody's service became to boycott. Two other ones, two quick ones. One is jumbo. You know what jumbo means, right? Big, large.
It means vente at Starbucks.
Exactly. Jumbo was actually a name of an elephant that was at the London Zoo from 1865 to 1882. I don't know where they came up with the name Jumbo. Before the elephant, it was just a name that was invented. But the elephant was so big that the word became synonymous with super big. And speaking of super big, Luddite. Anyone know what a Luddite is? Somebody who shuns technology and progress.
What is it called? That's
a Luddite. L-U-D-D-I-T-E.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you called me.
Yeah, it's named after a guy named Ned Ludd. He was an English laborer who was replaced by a textile weaving machine. So he broke in and attacked and destroyed the machine trying to halt progress, thinking that if he destroyed the machine, another one would never come along. So finally, I'll finish with juggernaut, one of my favorite words. I love juggernaut. You know, a juggernaut is a large, unstoppable force.
Right.
That is actually from the Hindi Jagannath, which is one of the titles given to Lord Vishnu. It means Lord of the World. And they used to, through the streets, they would drag this gigantic statue of Vishnu. And the people on the route were so dedicated and so loving, they would fling themselves in front of the wheels of the cart and get crushed by it just to show their devotion. And the cart would just keep on rolling. So that's where we get the term juggernaut.
Wow.
Juggernaut. Wow.
I didn't know that. Thank you, Jerry.
That's awesome.
And now you know.
Our new nickname for you. Hey, Juggernaut, how's Juggernaut. It going?
That's actually the name I use online is Juggernaut. He's my next. I'm getting a tattoo of him on my back.
Oh.
Yeah, to go with my other superhero tattoos.
You thought about the thigh?
What's that?
You thought about maybe doing your thigh?
No, probably not the thigh. I don't let anyone see my thighs. I'm not pretty like Maya.
Even if you got $13?
Even if I... No, you're not even for $13.
Not even for 13 bucks.
Maybe 13 million I'd like to see my thighs.
You're killing me, Juggernaut.
You don't see me in shorts. You don't see me in skirts. No.
Okay.
All right.
And now you know. That's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Blackstone's special feature.
Adele Park explores what happens when reality TV and marijuana collide in this conversation with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are really, really happy to have on again Adele Park. And she is the founder of the Straight to Audiobook Productions. And she just released a new audiobook called When Reality TV and Marijuana Collide. Yikes, another quirky audiobook. And I got to say, that's quite a title. Hey, thank you so much for coming back on, Adele, and welcome.
Thank you so much, Charlie. It's really an honor to be your guest on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. I, as you said, have just released a new audiobook called Yikes, another quirky audiobook. And this story is about a marijuana enthusiast named Blue McKenna, who gets involved in a reality TV show as a way to cure an apocalyptic case of writer's block. So a conglomerate of kooky contestants invades this polygamous community called Navel, Utah, and they're all there to compete in a reality show called Yikes. Now, these are sort of performance artists, so they're people like Stephen Finch, who is a stoner that develops a conspiracy theory about a rock band called the Rectal Surgeons. And another guy is Randall Smoot, who is a member of the gay mafia. So they're a little bit atypical from your usual reality TV types, but they are just as egotistical.
Wow, that's quite a story you got going there. Now, one other thing about these two titles, just for our listeners, you had the book out, Jitters. That was out last year, correct?
In 2011, I had a book out called Jitters, a quirky little audiobook. That also took place in this fictitious community of Navel, Utah, and it was a multi-voiced performance along with Yikes, another quirky audiobook. I use a full cast of characters. They take place in the same setting, but the two books are not related to each other. They're standalone stories, so you don't have to hear Jitters in order to understand Yikes, although they do happen in chronological order in the same location.
Well, where do you come up with your ideas for these?
I get a lot of ideas when I'm on the treadmill. I guess when I get a little bit jumped up on endorphins, I just get some wacky ideas, and if I'm lucky enough, I can get them written down. And then I also get a lot of story ideas when I'm out on the desert on my ATV. You know, I ride around and I see a trail, and I think, well, I wonder where that goes, and if I were to follow this trail, what kind of people would I find? And so I form a lot of story ideas that way.
You live out there in rural Utah.
Yes, I live in southern Utah.
Oh, okay.
St. George, Utah. And my area is a little bit unique. I write a lot about polygamists in my stories. And I think one of the reasons why I do that is because I live about 50 miles from Colorado City, which is the community that was headed up by Warren Jeffs, who is the notorious prophet who is now in a Texas prison serving time for doing crimes against young girls.
Oh, okay. I actually have been to St. George. It's a nice little town. Lisa, was it?
It really is. It's a little gem of a town. We've got spas everywhere. There's tons of golf courses here. There's palm trees. It's warm most of the time. Today, the fruit trees are in blossom. It's absolutely gorgeous.
And don't you have gambling there as well?
We do not have gambling in Utah, but we're about 30 miles from Mesquite, Nevada. And so if you like Nevada-style fun, that's the place to go.
For some reason, I thought St. George had gambling, but maybe not.
No, in fact, it's really difficult for people to even get a drink in this state. So something really would be hard to do. So, yeah, we still have some sort of archaic liquor laws in southern Utah. For example, I live in an area that has about 100,000 people and 3 liquor stores.
No drinking, no gambling. But now let's move on to...
You can ride your ATV.
Let's move on to the third vice. Now let's talk about women.
Well,
you can have as many as you want.
Well, in some areas of Utah, yes. In fact, one of the things that people ask me about a lot is the polygamy issue in Utah. And one of the things I would say about it is that one polygamous group is not like the other. We have all kinds of different sects throughout the state, and they don't all believe the same things, and not all of them are even based on religion. So if you're interested in the topic of polygamy, I always direct people to John Krakauer's book, Under the Banner of Heaven, because that really does a great job of delineating one polygamous sect from the other, because they're all different, and it's just kind of a unique situation, and I'm not sure why so many of them live in Utah, but that's just kind of what goes with the territory.
When you go on to yikes.com, your narrator comes on, Gary Morris, and he was a character, Jackie Wu, on Jitters, and he's Chet Waterhouse on Yikes. Where did you find him? Because he's a really great, exceptional narrator and quite a little character.
I agree, and he's also a really cool guy. This is how I found Gary. I went to a local production of A Christmas Story, and he was the narrator in that production. And so it was kind of like going on a blind date, but I found out who he was, and I called him up and asked him if he would like to audition for my audiobooks. We needed to bring someone else in because the person that we had initially hired to be Jackie Wu wasn't going to be able to work on the project. And so this was after the auditions and the casting had already taken place. So this was mid-production when I found Gary. He stepped right in. He did a wonderful job. And so then I hired him to do the casting for Yikes. And because he has had so much experience in theaters in different parts of the United States, he has access to a whole bunch of different actors. And so about half my cast that was on Yikes, another quirky audiobook, does not live in southern Utah. They were people that Gary had known or worked with in other areas.
How's the reaction been so far to, I know that Jitters was really successful. How's the reaction been so far to Yikes? Is it comparable?
Well, I have just started promoting Yikes, and, you know, when you're an indie studio, it is challenging to get your content out there. I do a number of different things to try and promote my projects. I have a blog. I also go on radio stations like yours.
Uh-huh.
I enter contests. I have my YouTube video. I have my website. And so I just try a variety of different things. I guess it's kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping something sticks. I haven't come up with the perfect combo yet, but I keep thinking if I put one foot in front of the other, sooner or later I'm going to get to where I want to go.
Well, speaking of your blog, how can people find your blog? What's the address?
Everybody can connect with me in a number of ways through my website, www.yikesaudiobook.com. And on the Yikes website, you can purchase a copy of Yikes. You can watch a little video. You can go to my blog. You can meet the actors. There's a whole bunch of different stuff on that site. So it's kind of a central site. It also links to the Jitters website as well.
Are your books available on Amazon?
My audiobooks are available on Amazon and Audible.com.
Jitters has a series of first-person narratives connected by radio announcements that tie everyone back into the main theme. I remember that distinctly from hearing the book. But Yikes doesn't seem to have that. You know, it's just... But the story is almost like told in a first-person narratives. How'd you come across that kind of writing style?
My background is as a radio news reporter in both television and radio. And one of the problems that I had when I started writing novels is that it sounded like I was giving you a newscast. So my mom, who's an English teacher, suggested when I was writing a magazine article about a wedding, she said, why don't you try and write it in first person? And I said, well, Mom, I'm not having the kind of wedding that this person needs to have. And she said, you don't have to be that person or want what they want in order to write in first person. And that was huge for me because once I started writing in first person, I broke a lot of my bad news habits. So it's a lot easier to engage people in a story if you're speaking in first person. Now, as for the narration, I love narration. I love it in movies. I like it in TV shows. I like it in books. I like it in different ways. And so for Jitters, a quirky little audiobook, because that was about a radio shock jock named Nancy Neptune, it made sense to narrate through a series of newscasts and have the actors react to the events of the day. So that just sort of fit in with what we were doing. With Yikes, what I did is I created these narration pieces called Examine Our Navel. And this is the viewpoint of the townspeople of Navel without anyone in particular. It's sort of their general viewpoint of all these wackadoos who come to their community to participate in this reality TV show called Yikes. So in order to balance out these very extreme characters, I wanted to have this sort of conservative viewpoint coming through my narration pieces. Now, with my third audiobook, I've come up with what I hope is an even more interesting way of narrating it. But again, it will be first-person narratives for all of the characters with a wraparound narration that ties the story together and advances the plot.
Well, you know, I share your sentiment about narration. I think it can really enhance a story. And I've read some books that had narration in it. I'll give you an example. Shawshank Redemption, the Stephen King short story.
Yes.
That, if you read the short story by Stephen King and you see the movie, they're almost verbatim. And the thing that's so great about the movie and the book is that it makes you feel like he's telling you the story.
Yes, I agree. I even noticed that on Desperate Housewives, they had a narrator. And I really was attracted to that. I'm attracted to narrators in all kinds of different settings. And I think as a writer, it puts you in a situation where you can make two sort of unrelated things work together, because you can sort of seam it up, pad it with the narration in between, and that sort of gets you from one point to the next.
Right, you can get on with the dialogue in one segment, and you can, you know, tie up the loose ends with the narration.
Exactly, yeah, it's kind of a convenient way of taking care of little problems that you didn't clear up with, you know, however your chapter ended.
Right, and then you have the really cool factor that when you're reading the book or you're listening to the book, you feel like, you know, it's just you, the story, and the narrator. And you're the only ones in on it.
And I really like the guy that narrated Yikes, another quirky audiobook. He's an actor named Steve Campbell, and Steve can be found in both of my videos, both the ones for Jitters and the ones for Yikes. And he's just a delightful character. The camera really loves this guy. He gets on camera, and he's just very natural. And he had a lot of work as an audio person prior to coming into my studio. So Steve has a lot of different skills, and I heard his voice in my head when I was rewriting the script for Yikes, because this was a project that I had produced as sort of a prototype many years ago, using nothing but a mic, a mixer, and a laptop. So it was just something that I did just because I wanted to make an audiobook. And it was after I had produced that book that I decided to build a studio, and then I produced Jitters, and then I rewrote the script for Yikes. And when I was doing that, I kept hearing Steve in my head. So I was so glad that he turned up for auditions, because when he walked in, I knew he was going to get the part.
So how is your studio, straight to audio productions, how is that coming along?
It's really great. As you know from being in the audiobook industry yourself with Blackstone Audio, the technology now is really clean and it's affordable. And that means that studios like mine, indie studios, can now get broadcast quality sound without having to have a bunch of really expensive equipment.
Right.
So I use Pro Tools, which is how I manipulate sound. And I have two other just small pieces of equipment. One's a Digit design box, and then I have some other thing too. And so it's, you know, it's really basic stuff. What I have that I think really speaks well for my studio is a nice sound recording room. I had it custom built, and I had them put in really nice soundproofing, and it's in a walk-in closet, so there's tons of space. So I hope my actors feel comfortable and happy working in here.
I'm sure they do. Well, now let's remind our listening audience now where they can pick up a copy of Yikes, another quirky little audiobook. It's available on Amazon. It's also available on www.yikes.audiobook.com. Is that correct?
It's www.yikesaudiobook.com.
Great. And you know what? It's also available on Audible. So just a really, really pleasure speaking with you again, Adele. And, you know, we look forward to, you know, having you on again when your third edition comes out and doing a lot more things with you. Maybe you'll make the trip up here to Ashland, Oregon, the great Pacific Northwest. We can bring you
up. I would love to come up there. I have heard nothing but great things about how beautiful Oregon is and how laid back and cool everyone is. And they're not just talking about Portlandia either.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It is a very laid back town, and there's a lot of talent here, and it's very, very beautiful. Okay. Well, yeah, you're always welcome, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Okay, Adele?
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a nice night.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
To learn more about Adele Park, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Maybe I am really insane. Maybe I was choosing my truth. What if I was disoriented and illusional?
Sophia's current U.S. tour included a stop in Ashland, Oregon. However, she caught up with us from Florida in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, from Florida, we have Sophia Tavik on. She's a wonderful singer from Sweden. Sophia, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Unbelievable now that we're talking to you again. For all of our listeners out there, Sophia came into our town of Ashland, Oregon, here in the USA, and she performed. We saw her at a place called The Playwright, and just a wonderful, wonderful performance.
Oh, thanks.
And she was going on a tour, or has been on a tour, for the last year throughout the United States. And we wanted to chat with you a little bit about that. Tell us how it went and what were some of your highlights and what are some of the places that you think this, wow, this I never knew a good place like this existed.
Well, you know, it's been just such an amazing adventure. I've been on the road now for almost 15 months. And I started out in Florida in December 2011. And I bought this old RV that I fixed up, and that was my home for the tour. The tour is actually, I'm doing my last, like, public gig tomorrow here in Florida. So I've done, like, the full circle around the U.S. I played in 37 states. I mean, it's been amazing. I mean, there's so much I've seen of the U.S. that I had no idea, you know. Like, coming from Europe, you kind of go to, like, you know, the big cities like New York or Chicago or L.A. when you come over here. And I've just seen, like, all the small cities as well. And I think that's just so neat and, you know, met so many wonderful people. And, yeah, it's just been a great adventure.
When we saw you, you just seemed, you know, even though it was towards the end of your tour, you seemed so fresh. And, like, you were singing the songs like that was the first time you'd ever sang them.
Well, thank you.
And now, seriously, we see a lot of people here because, you know, this is quite a little theater town. And so we have a lot of artists come through and... I was like, wow, you know, this woman is just like, you know, almost like you were auditioning for the first time because everything seemed like right off the first leg of the tour.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm glad you think that. If you had seen me on the first leg of the tour, though, I'm not sure you would have thought that was like the first leg of the tour. When you start out, you just like you're nervous and you don't know, like, how is it going to go, or, you know, are people going to like my songs or whatever. So at the point where I came to Ashland, I had some experience. I felt comfortable with myself and the show and like the songs and everything. So I think you probably saw me at a very good place.
Well, we certainly enjoyed it. You know, out of your set, I'm sure that it changes up from time to time. But what song do you perform that you just love to perform each and every night?
Well, I usually start with the same song, and it's The King of the Willow Tree from my fourth album, which is called Florida, by the way. And that's just one of my favorite songs, and I feel very comfortable with that song. So it's a great song to start up with, no matter like if you're in a like smaller setting or if you're in a big theater or whatever. It's just a song that kind of starts out the set in a very good way, I think. Are you good?
Record anything live? Maybe we're going to hear a Sophia live album?
Yeah, actually this spring or summer I'm going to release a live album with stuff I recorded on the tour, and I'm also going to release a little like a coffee table kind of book, you know, with pictures from the tour and some like stories and stuff about crazy stuff that happened along the way and great people that I met and stuff like that. So I haven't started like assembling all this yet, but I have a bunch of material, so it's going to be a fun project.
Well, you know, we're really looking forward to that. You know, I want to tell all of our listening audience out there around the world that you have a Facebook page that's just really nice.
Thank you.
And I, of course, we subscribe to your Facebook page.
Facebook.com/SophiaTalvikMusic. And my website is SophiaTalvik.com.
Okay. Well, you know, on your Facebook page, I almost felt like I was on tour with you, because when you would post up, and I was thinking to myself, you know, wow, look at this woman, man. Everyone is clamoring to have their picture taken with her. Of course, we did too as well when you were here. So, you know, we're in the crowd.
Well, you know, I have my husband with me on tour, and he always takes a lot of pictures from the shows, like when I'm playing and with people that come up and talk to me after the show and stuff. So, I mean, it's just a good way for me to kind of document the tour and remember like all the people that I met.
It's amazing. And I think it's great the way you're so friendly with everyone.
Thanks. Yeah.
So what city or town did you play that really stuck out in your head out of the 37 states that you played?
Well, it's kind of hard to say because I have a bunch of favorites, but I would probably say Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
Oh, wow. Did not see that coming.
I know, me neither, right? And that's probably why it was such a great surprise to play there, because I did a little show at like an arts community center, and there was not a lot of people who showed up. But the people who showed up, they just invited me and my husband to like a potluck dinner a couple of days after. And then I actually had another show at the Bama Theater, which is a beautiful venue in Tuscaloosa. And they brought all their friends, and just, you know, they were so friendly and just took care of us and invited us to their homes and stuff. And it was just like, you know, coming home, basically. Like, people are so friendly there.
Wow. You know, I have been to the South, you know, many, many times. And I will say that about the South. I think they're just more homespun. They're more like, hey, come on in.
Yeah, maybe. Well, it was great playing there anyway. But I mean, I have a lot of favorite like cities that I just loved along the way. And Portland was one of them. I think Portland was a beautiful, great city to be in. Seattle, of course. San Francisco. But, you know, basically like the towns where I had the most fun, that's basically like smaller towns where I meet people and people are, you know, not afraid to come up and talk to me after the show or just feel like, you know, they know me already.
That's great. That's wonderful. You must have like to use a $50 word, a plethora of stories to tell us about, you know, traveling in that RV, because you have got to have experienced some bad weather along the way.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, traveling in an RV, you kind of want to stay where it's nice and temperate. You know, you don't want it to be too hot because it gets really hot in the RV, and you don't want it to be too cold. Well, we did some miscalculations in January in North Carolina. We were up in the mountains there and it was really cold. Also in Chicago this last summer, it was just so warm. It was like living in a sauna. And we actually had one of the worst thunderstorms in Chicago as well. And it was just like, I thought the RV was going to fall over or something because it was so windy and it was just like raining sideways. And it was actually like raining in through the vents, like along the windows. It was kind of weird. Oh,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Speaking of Chicago, you played at Lollapalooza in Chicago, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I did.
And how fun was that?
It was awesome. I mean, it's a couple of years ago now. It was in 2008, but that was the first like real tour that I did in the States. So it was really a great experience. I had my backing band with me at that point, and we did this little tour from New York to Chicago. Yeah, it was a great experience. And just like, you know, hanging out at the festival, like seeing all the great bands and then going backstage and seeing those people backstage, it was kind of unreal.
Yeah, I bet. So your last show in the USA for a while is going to be tomorrow night in Orlando. Is that correct?
It is. Well, I'm actually doing like a couple of songs in San Francisco at a thing called the Achievement Awards next week, but it's not really open to the public. So my last real show is tomorrow in Gainesville, north of Orlando.
Okay. And then are you? Do you have plans to go back to Europe or?
Yeah, we're going back to Europe and we're going to keep touring down in Europe and have Berlin as our home base. I've actually not toured that much in Europe. I've toured Sweden and a little bit in the UK, but it's going to be like a whole new experience for me to kind of explore the European market as well, because, you know, I've been focusing on the US for so long. So
I'm not a musician, but I do speak with a lot of them because of our radio show and stuff. And what is the deal with Berlin? Because everyone that's in Europe is always, you know, their focal point is Berlin. You know, yeah, Berlin's going to be our home base. And I just heard all these great things. Like, is it because it's centrally located or is it just like a real happening scene?
A little bit of both. I mean, it has a great location. And so you can, you know, do shorter tours and like stay in Berlin and do like shorter tours in Europe. And it's also a very pretty city. It's like a lot of things going on. A lot of artists and musicians come there. And it's actually also one of the cheapest capitals in Europe to live in.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Helps if you're a starving artist.
Well, you know what? When you tour Europe, you know, everyone speaks a different language. Do you speak more than English and Swedish?
I do speak a little bit of German, and I hope to be able to brush up on that when I get there. I did try a little bit with, like, yeah, I got an iPhone app to kind of try to brush up on it. But, you know, I think I'm going to have to wait until I get there and actually I can practice on real people.
Right. Well, doesn't everyone in Europe pretty much predominantly speak English as well?
Yeah, they do.
Well, that's going to be very beneficial.
You know, that's why it's so easy for me to tour in the States, because everyone here speaks the same language. Well, if you get down to Miami, I guess people speak more Spanish, but apart from that.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people speak Spanish in the U.S. now.
I know. I wish I would speak Spanish, but I don't know how to, so.
I think Spanish is the most widely spoken language in the world.
Yeah, it's a huge language. Well, what about Chinese though? That's probably
They only speak Chinese in China and around China, but the Spanish is spoken in Spain and all of South America and pretty much everywhere in the U.S.
True, but there's so many of the Chinese.
Oh, that's true. Hmm.
I think that Asia and China in particular are going to be like a really new, like big new market for music, actually.
You know, a friend of mine is in China right now. Her name is Panda. Just a coincidence that her name is Panda. It's short for Pandora. But she's from the U.S. here, and she used to be involved with our show. But she's teaching in China, and she has been for the last 2 years. And she was saying the same thing, that it's, I wouldn't say it's getting westernized, but it's starting to, you know, open up more and more and more.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I know, I think they're just hungry for like new cultures and you know, the experiencing of like different cultures and stuff, because they've been like kind of locked into their own culture for so long. So I think that's going to be
they're kind of getting tired of Chinese food. They go, hey, man.
I would be.
Can we have a little some Swedish pancakes once in a while?
Why not?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you said barometer about being so many people, then I would have to amend my statement about Spanish being the most widely spoken and say it's English. Mm-hmm. Because they speak English in India and they have over 1 billion people there.
That's true.
So I don't know. I go, but maybe when, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll all be speaking Mandarin one day.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Not cool for me because I've tried it. I can't even eat with chopsticks, man.
Then you're in trouble.
Yeah, I am. And my Spanish was really kind of suffers. I mean, you know, I can, you know, I got up to like, you know, taco and enchilada, and then, you know, I've been working on tostada that hasn't really kicked in yet.
Yeah, I know. You know, I just know like cerveza, you know, whatever.
Very good, Sophia.
That's
very good.
Really, you need to know, right? Taco right. And cerveza.
That's right, cerveza. We pretty much got it covered now. You know, that's what everyone looks up on their apps all the time, no matter where they are. I have a French one and an Italian one, and it's always like, you know, where's the hotel? Where's the restroom? Where's the beer? Where's the pub? You know?
Yeah, you know, I usually try to teach the audience a little bit of Swedish, and that's, you know, I usually teach them the Swedish word for cheers, which is skål. Not too hard, right?
No, cool. Not very hard at all. And it's also a chewing tobacco in the U.S.
Really? Wow. There you go. Even easier. All right. Well, then you're welcome to Sweden.
All right. Okay, Sophia, you know what? It's been so great talking with you.
Well, thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. You know, and it was wonderful seeing you when you were here in Ashland. Want everybody to go to your Facebook page.
Exactly. Facebook.com/Sophia Talvik Music. And that's Sophia with an F. T-A-L-V-I-K music.
Okay. And of course, you can get all the links there on your webpage there.
Yes.
From the Facebook page. And also, you'll be the featured artist on Just Imagine Inc. And we will have links there to your Facebook page and to all your albums where people can pick it up and listen to it.
Awesome.
And thank
Sounds
you
great.
So very much.
Well, thank you.
So will you come back on when you get to Europe and let us know how your German's doing?
Of course. Maybe I can teach you some German.
Maybe we can sprechen Sie Deutsch, yeah? Yeah.
Aber ja, jawohl.
Okay, well, thank you so much and have a wonderful show tomorrow night.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
To learn more about Sophia, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Living Vertical, winner of the 2012 Gold Independent Publisher Award. The follow-up novel to the blockbuster Sideways tracks the continuing story of Miles Raymond and his buddy Jack. This is a road novel for the smart wine lover, and it is anything but predictable. What happens on the trip north through California accounts for much of the hilarious, ludicrous, and outrageous action. Author Rex Pickett has not let us down. The Oregon Wine Press.
Desolate. I walked back into the clubhouse. Maya's half-empty bottle still sat perched on the bar. I poured a glass, debated calling Jack. I could guess where he was, but decided against it, not wanting to get shanghaied into a long night at the hitching post. I paid the corkage, tipped an obscene $100 so the bartender could invest in a new shirt, and left. Walking along a deserted stretch of 246 in the direction of the Marriott, I considered what a contemptible, smug jerk I had become, what a little gust of fame had engendered in me, and all it took was 30 minutes with Maya to evoke it. I missed her. I had her, and I let her go. Now, like my marriage, it was over. No going back. I was miserable. I didn't know what I had been expecting when I came to the clubhouse, but I got hit upside the face, and it hurt. Hurt. Made me think of a line Kafka wrote in a letter to his Czech translator, Milena Jesenska. You are the knife that I twist into myself. Is it why I couldn't love? Without always wanting to run away? I stopped on the 101 overpass, jackknifed over the guardrail, and stared at the red and white rivers of traffic. Naturally, Maya had been hurt by my pushing her away when the movie hit. I'm sure it wasn't too difficult for her to go on the internet, punch my name into Google, and find photos of me with different women at premieres and film festivals and awards shows. She'd heard me profess my love for her enough times to believe it. And now the only way she could express her deep-seated and legit resentment was to invite me for a drink, kiss me hatefully, then give me the middle finger and walk off forever.
Better, richer than sideways, says Kirk Honeycutt of The Hollywood Reporter. Rex Pickett is a screenwriter and novelist living in Santa Monica, California. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Now Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call us at 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook, and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.